done a phenomenal job at dealing with the flood mitigation issues, applying to FEMA, applying to the state, and really implementing programs to improve the infrastructure, whether it be bulkheads on the Bay Area, or also pump stations and other improvements. New Jersey PAC regulations. This is interesting, and given the fact that it's going to have a tremendous impact, if implemented, on your community, you all, from a planning perspective, need to be aware of this. The state came out with the New Jersey PAC rules about a year ago, and this is an 1,100-page document of regulations. Some people like to say, well, they just want to raise your house. It's much, much, much more than that. This has tremendous regulations, regulatory requirements. Anything that's built in Ventnor would have to go through a state review process. The application that you just had before you would be required to go through a state review process, something that doesn't exist today. Basically, the regulations are based on a 75-year projection. And even the scientists who put together the projections, a gentleman from Rutgers, has said that you cannot project what's going to happen 75 years from now. Here we are doing the master plan and the master plan re-exam. When you do a master plan, you look 20 years into the future. And you can do that with some certainty, but it's all projections. It's all estimates. To go 75 years in the future, you're talking about whether the polar ice caps are going to melt in 75 years. It's a real stretch. And I'm a technician, but scientists have told us that this is a stretch, and it's been well documented. What we've asked the state through your elected officials and the state senator and the legislative team and others is that they do this incrementally. Look at 20 years, 30 years. Make the changes you feel are necessary, and then look at it again 10 years from now and make additional changes. Go about it incrementally so it doesn't have such a tremendous impact on the community. The state hasn't responded to that. They received over 3,000 comments on these regulations. They said that they've responded to them. The responses have not been released. One thing that we've asked, and we had meetings in this room with Lance and with the senator and with others, with the commissioner's office, and we asked for an economic assessment, do an economic impact of what this is going to mean to Ventnor and other communities by putting these regulations in place so that we can anticipate it, so we can work forward. That's never been received. So a lot of things have been promised, have not been received, and they have made a small adjustment. Instead of being 4 feet, or actually 5 feet of our base flood elevation for new development, now it's 4 feet. But the other 900 pages in this document really haven't changed at this point. So we continue to lobby through the senator's office and through others. The communities are responding by passing new resolutions and letters to provide new testimony on these issues, because basically the governor's office has responded once to delay these regulations, and all we ask is that they delay it until the new administration comes into place and that they listen to the towns, which they have not done. They have not had meetings with the elected officials and all the communities. They haven't had meetings with the county, who's all going to be affected by this, because infrastructure is affected, county roads are affected, bridges are affected, everything is affected by these regulations. We'll know right now. The plan is to adopt these rules in January of next year. If the state continues on the path that they want to go on right now, we're doing everything we can, and we're working on a statewide level to delay that and have these regulations be reconsidered after the new year with the new administration. So it's a real challenge for Ventnor and for all communities. FEMA flood insurance premiums continue to be a challenge. Many of the premiums continue to increase as the state continues to look at those requirements. So that will be another challenge coming forward. The state, the federal government, FEMA is in the process of putting together new flood maps, which should be released to the communities within the next year. The FEMA flood maps are much more detailed and much more accurate than what DEP was using. So, you know, we're looking forward to seeing those maps and seeing how they'll impact the community. Dorset Avenue Bridge has been getting a lot of attention lately. And so that'll also be something that we want to look forward to in the future as to how that could be addressed. Obviously, it's county infrastructure, but it bifurcates your city from a public safety standpoint and an emergency standpoint, and an issue that certainly needs to be addressed. And these are just some issues. I'm sure I missed many. And housing affordability. Good news is, according to Zillow, now Zillow is only tracking homes that sell, but according to Zillow, the median home prices for properties that sold since COVID has increased 117% in Ventnor. Pretty significant. So, that's pretty consistent with all the Barrier Island communities. All of them are over 100% over the last four or five years. So it's been very significant. But on the other side, the issue becomes, you know, the affordability of the community going forward and how you continue to make Ventnor a community that people can live in. So it's kind of two sides of the coin on that one. And then finally, a schedule. We're here today at a public meeting to kick off the master plan process. We would hope to continue to meet with the planning board, whether it be through a committee or in at the full board, as well as have public meetings and get as much public input and consensus as we can and complete the plan by March of next year. The fact that you're in the process of revising your master plan now protects your zoning. You know, if you weren't redoing the master plan at this point, then after 10 years lapses on your old master plan, your zoning can be challenged legally. So we're certainly, by meeting here tonight, we're protecting the city's zoning going forward. So that's what I have. It's kind of an overview. I know there's probably a number of other issues that are important to the planning board and the public, and that's why we're here. But I just wanted to give you kind of a sense of what I see as an outsider and what challenges and opportunities there are for the community. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much. Board members, do you have any questions of Mr. Attella?
I'll kick off.
Go ahead.
Is there anything that the city can do in this master plan to enhance the aesthetics of the downtown? Is there anything that can be specifically incorporated in it that would set us up for grants and would also encourage improvements like public spaces in the downtowns, streetscape enhancements like we had in the Atlantic Avenue, North Beach area? Those kinds of things, and down to the nitty-gritty, even I don't know that the forms of buildings and the facade improvements could find their way into that, but it could encourage it, and then we could piggyback on it from the municipal side.
Definitely, and you know, that could be a focus. Obviously, when you're asking for funds, one of the first things they're looking for is consensus. And, you know, if it's included in your master plan and it's documented and detailed, then, you know, you're showing, and going through a public process, it tells that the funders that this is something that everybody wants. Because the last thing that anyone, an outside funder, wants to do is fund something that the community, that a section of the community, doesn't feel supportive of. Yeah. So that's certainly important. And then also, like you're just mentioning, as far as design improvements and things like that, obviously it has to be in the master plan to support any zoning changes or any modifications of the design. So the master plan would be the first place to to start with those types of improvements. So that's certainly something that could be a major focus.
Yeah, so I would just say I would encourage, you know, debate on the on that subject, but I think that you could find a good argument that after we've found that so much growth that you've expressed, there's a point where the city needs to put an attractive first face forward, and I think we've got some room to grow there, and if we can have the backup of the master plan to help us in other initiatives to look for money that's not coming from the taxpayer, it's a plus. Because everybody wants to go to a downtown that's attractive, safe, and clean, and that's all I'm advocating for.
I echo what the mayor is saying, and I also encourage that there's some aesthetics as far as to some design aesthetics be part of the plan, so that there's a more appealing look to the downtown. And it also, I think it also gears to tourism and why people come to the community. So there's things to do, even for our residents. We're a pedestrian community. People like to walk. People like to go and adventure. And so we have to create a more interesting community. I think that's where you're going there with this whole thing. And so I think that has to be conveyed. And that eventually converts to a longer shoulder season or a longer business thing where our merchants do better financially.
Let me ask the question, is there an interest in the downtown areas to incorporate more residential?
I believe that's a planner on the board.
Mixed use is a positive thing for the most part. What we have seen, and I'll throw it back to the mayor because it's public safety, there's conflicts there. I was at dinner Saturday night in North Beach and it was packed.
Yeah.
There's apartments near there. Mm-hmm. Having trouble parking. So there's no new space to make parking unless you're buying up lots and things of that nature. Residential as a mixed use, yes. But and then what we have done is we've actually required that residential component to provide parking. We had one next to Sephora that we approved that required second floor apartments to have parking there. That may or may not work.
Yeah.
You know, we required it on that site, and I'm not sure that that's going to be ideal. When we came into office, we had probably 65-70% of our commercial space full. Now it's in the 90% percentile. So we've got the commercial going well. I think that's been helpful. I think we came out of COVID really good with that. We supported a lot of the outdoor enterprises and things happening outdoor, and not necessarily just the restaurants. You know, some of the other folks, the retail, are coming out with, you walk down the street, Crimpers is one of the biggest ones. They do a lot of stuff from sidewalk sales and things like that. So we've encouraged that, to bring that out in these communities, these commercial areas.
I think
it's aesthetics.
Yeah,
it's aesthetics of the drive.
But I will caution, I don't know that we want to set aside, requirements.
No.
We want to encourage it. We got to find a line there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you go into Haddonfield, they're going to tell you what kind of mullions to put in your windows. When we did renovations on this building, because it's historic,
right,
you have to buy the certain windows. That not even triples your cost. It mm-hmm. quadruples your cost of things. You don't want to do that, but we want to have some sort of, maybe guidelines would be the better way to look at them, instead of ordinances or things of that nature.
Okay.
But we want to look at that in the master plan. You know, downtown right here, Dorset Avenue needs a huge facelift.
Mm-hmm.
And that just really needs something there. But our central business district could use some help with our facades.
Okay.
You know, the mayor's had some success with one of the buildings, and we're hopeful that moves forward. We don't want to put that out there yet. But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
I think the community is developing a personality of its own.
So,
and that's the way we need to build that personality, and that gives us a better lifestyle, and makes it all interesting for all of us who live here, as well as those who come and visit, and those who want to visit the place. It makes them want to come back.
But to your point, population is what's going to drive the success. You need to have more than enough people to sustain the businesses across the the shoulder and then through the winter and then back into the shoulder.
Right.
So to have that kind of population in a strategic way, I think is the key. You know, the North Beach area is already one of our densest populations. There's 3,000 bedrooms. If you go in the North Beach area, there's 2,000 bedrooms in the next five blocks, and there's 2,000 bedrooms in the next five blocks, and there's 2,000 bedrooms in the next five blocks. So that area has already got a built-in density. The Dorset Avenue corridor, I think, works better from a design aesthetic to have that residential above the businesses. For some, like if you look at Fish and Whistle and some of the other new development there, I think that area has kind of become its own built-in aesthetic with condominiums above and shops below. But yeah, you have to, I think, you know, Commissioner Landgraf is right. You have to create, encourage and create guidelines. And then, and I also think you have to put a carrot out there. I think you have to also encourage them with some, like we did with, you know, with the waiving of the fee for a second, you know, water line. I think you also have to have some type of incentive for these businesses to take that extra step and encourage the facade improvement. So we are talking to the some of the other facades that a glaring one is the Dollar General. So we're talking to them about maybe improving their facade in some way, shape, or manner. And that's just like any other neighborhood. When you see a neighborhood start to develop, and I think that's the momentum that we need next. We've had a lot of business. We brought in liquor licenses. The things that you mentioned, the really one that's exciting to me is the idea of a adaptive reuse of a school. That with the residential component, you know, the people drive. You want people, not cars, in your downtowns. And
great, thank you.
So, but anyway, you know, so that's my two cents. I think that's our next big push.
Board members, any other comments we have?
Jim, I have a question. So I'm looking at these percentages of Ventnor, Longport, and Markey. And I see that we're 37% with seasonal housing growth in Longport and Margate. Do you feel as if, as the housing prices go up in Ventnor, we're going to be trending towards their numbers in the future?
Well, you can see there's a trend. You know, it was 33% 10 years ago. It's 38% now in Ventnor. So yeah, it's a trend, and the only way, as we talked about earlier, not the only way, but as the mayor just mentioned, I mean, in order to make things happen the way you want it to happen, you have to provide incentives. One, affordability is important. When you have to have people here, you want to have people here year round, so there's a balance that needs to be achieved there. The other thing too, I mean, you know, you have a great community. I mean, you have good schools, you have good recreational facilities. That makes people want to live in the community. A lot of communities don't have those assets that you have.
Well, what we're seeing is that folks are moving here for our elementary school, and they're leaving when the kids go to high school. Yeah. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
So we have to get a better opportunities for our kids to stay here when they get into high school.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that a challenge for us that we have to work on as well. That's not really part of the master plan, but maybe we talk about that.
Right.
That's something that we have to be better prepared to, because that's why people are leaving.
I agree with you, Lance, because I noticed in the last 3 to 5 years, there's been more younger people walking around with babies and young children.
Right.
And it was really nice to see what I grew up in, you know, and it disappeared. And now, I you know what, I didn't even think of the high school part of it, and of it, what you just said, and that is true about
it. Look at the numbers, the kids that we're sending to Lansing High School are dropping significantly every year,
yeah,
which is good for us from an economic standpoint, dollar-wise,
because
they charge us $23,000 for every student that goes there.
Yeah.
An incredible amount of money they charge us.
Yeah.
Where a student can go to ACIT for about $4,500 that's our tax dollars.
Yes.
There's a disparity of where they go.
Is there a school choice for Ventnor families?
So there is. So Mainland is a lottery. Ocean City's a lottery. ACIT, you apply, and for the most part, they're in for a huge expansion right now, which is a great option for our kids. I encourage it all the time. It's one, all cards on the table, I sit on their board. So I sit on their Academy of Math, Engineering, and Science board, so I encourage the kids to go there. It's not your VOTEC of when you and I went to high school. It's you can go there to learn how to fix a car or learn how to be a doctor. You know, it starts you out in that process. You can take classes that start you out in the medical field, engineering fields, everything, nursing, dentistry, all that stuff's out there. So, and we encourage it in our school system. Look, folks that go to Langsley High School get a great education there. They're most of them go into the honors program, and that's looked upon greatly when you're going to colleges.
Mm-hmm.
But it's expensive. And we have no control. I don't want to get into that conversation because I'll probably get suspended for my day job. But it's crazy the amount of money they spend without our money that they spend without a say.
But that's a good question. And that's, you know, the challenge, and you know, we work in other communities, we're having the same, we just completed the master plan for Summers Point. And Summers Point is really the tale of two cities. You know, it's becoming more of a second home community, almost like a Barrier Island. And but people don't stay there. You know, a lot of young families, it's difficult because it's for a number of different reasons. But it's a challenge. And but if that's for number one, and you know, it's really a consensus of the community. If that's what the community wants, then there are things that we can do in the master plan to encourage home ownership and families living here and slowing the trend towards seasonal homes,
slowing,
which I think is the consensus here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Jim, I have one further question, I guess, is typically, you know, everyone in the room has been here. We all look at the city, live in the city, and so on. And we're used to looking at the city. Now, my question is simply, are we missing anything by being too familiar, living in the forest, and not seeing outside the trees? So my question is how can we in this master plan get a view of the city from people who don't live here and see if we're missing anything?
That's a good question.
I mean, there's an aspect here of, well, we're all used to it. We all think we know it. But are we missing anything? And sometimes an outside view of someone who's not here, not looking through our eyes, can actually enlighten us and or verify that we're right.
Yeah, actually, I think you probably have the best insight. You know, the planning board members, elected officials, the community itself. I mean, that's really where you get the ideas. That's where you get the insight.
Okay.
You know, we presented the trends because a lot of times you don't realize that these trends are happening, that the community is changing as much as it's changing. And when you start to look at the data, it's pretty revealing. You know, there are trends that are occurring in the communities that unless you really address them, they're going to continue. They're going to continue and they're going to manifest into things that you might not want. So you know, I think the most important thing is to build a consensus. And you know, this discussion is a good starting point. Because you know, if you know where you want to go, then we can help drive that vision.
So, and we also need to hear from our residents, right? What they like about the city, what they don't like about that city.
Exactly.
What can we do to put in a master plan to make it better?
Exactly.
So that outreach process has to be put in place.
There's definitely.
Because otherwise, it's my plan.
Right.
When I'm thinking of, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, but it's my plan. I need to know what everyone else in the room thinks.
Yeah, and that's why we're not rushing through this. There's plenty of time for public comment and public involvement.
Berlin, you had done some research on your own.
Yes.
We're lucky enough to have a former county planning director from up north on our planning board who lives here, so it's fantastic to have another planner on the board. So, and we're not paying. Well, you had done some research, and you can share that with Jim, and I think you already have.
Yes.
So some of our zones have some quirkiness to them, and we might want to tweak them a little bit, so I think that should be part of it as well.
Okay.
Jim, to Jay's point about getting outside or other views, is there any process of looking at master plans of other communities, perhaps, you know, seasonal or tourist communities, to see if there are any best practices that are working in other communities that we might say we have some similarities to try to bring some of those outside views that perhaps, you know, we're too close to seeing?
There is. I mean, and Lance and I have worked on these in other communities, you know, like a studio, you know, a college studio or something like that.
Yeah.
And you could reach out and see if, you know, Princeton or Rutgers, yeah, and they all have planning programs.
Right.
And they look for communities to work in. And
right.
Fender's a pretty cool community to work in.
And
then we get, we'll get some outside insight. And mm-hmm. we can look into that, see if that's a possibility. Might be too late for this semester, but we can try. But that way, you know, you're getting an outside view.
Right.
And it's interesting, because they do think of things that you may not think of.
This board is somewhat adventurous as far as how they would go about it. Likes to bring in information mm-hmm. process. And just like Tim said, this is what it is. And Jim, and you work in other communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring that to the table also,
right.
The experience you have with that. But the thing is we're not complacent. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be complacent here, but you don't want to be foolhardy either.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, you know, hit the mark, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and do what's right for the community. Mm-hmm. But hearing from the community is an important part. And I can't stress enough is that we're not going to rush the process.
Right.
And that is critical. And I think we should also have some meetings there. So we did it in the former master plan, where we could even hear from some of the second homeowners too,
mm-hmm.
because they have a financial stake in the community also. And with that, I think that's important. That should be considered also, because they're part of our financial component. Is that one of our industries?
Mm-hmm.
So.
I just want to beat it to death a little bit more and say that I agree 100% with your points, especially, but the idea that you can't have a solution until you know the problems
right.
first. So throwing a wide net out there and getting the public engagement, I've seen in other cities two things that I suggest, and I'd like to know if you have this in mind for this public engagement. One thing was a empty storefront was taken in Saratoga Springs, and that during our master plan reiteration, and they actually had maps up, and people gave them little pieces of paper and notes to put into and pin them on the spaces in the map of the city where they thought there were problems. And we did, so that's the one thing. The second thing is when the bicycle pedestrian plan did that virtually.
Mm-hmm.
They allowed people to say, I have a problem with this area, and they graded a consensus online. And that's a way to get people from out of town that are, you know, second homeowners that aren't going to go through a storefront. I don't know how they had a huge map and a huge engagement for their
yeah, we can certainly do both of those. And we usually when we have a public charrette on master plan, we usually have people, it's interactive.
Yeah.
So people that might not want to speak out at a public meeting up to a microphone can just
right.
map things out and give us ideas. Yeah, it's good.
And that should lead, to your point, the direction of where do you find the best practice? Because,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, it's not, we don't have all the answers.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you think there, with technology, there's got to be a variety of ways of getting public opinion, surveys, you know, things that, you know, you throw a bomb out on a Facebook page and, you know, you certainly get hundreds of input. So, you know, I think from a technology standpoint, in addition to a public meeting,
yeah.
I mean, it's good to have, you know, something like this.
Yeah, we can do that. And you have good outreach in the community, too, through newsletters and your yeah. website and other things, so we can get people involved that way.
Well, other people have come to the, citizens have come to the here tonight. I think it would be nice to be able to hear if anyone has any comments. But if we could, we're in the beginning stages. So if you could keep your comments brief, if you'd like to say something, Now is the time, you just raise your hand if you want to make a comment, please come up. But do keep them brief, because, you know, we're not going to have major discussions here. We're in the beginning phase of introducing. So, but I really do appreciate you being here. It always helps the board. So, ma'am, you're welcome. Please stand up to film up to the mic. Tell us your name and your address.
Could you speak in the microphone?
The building with the green on it.
My name is Sally Mahon. I live 30 North Weymouth. And I just want to introduce the topic of short-term rentals into any discussion of the future master plan. In the area that I live in, and I've lived there for 20 years, this is a big issue in terms of the rapidness in which short-term rentals are taking over real estate. It contributes to the parking issues that we all who live there have to deal with. And it's going to need a systematic review of solutions.
When you say short-term, what is a short-term?
Well, the thing that comes to everybody's mind is Airbnb.
Okay.
But I know in Ventnor, you guys have all kinds of different ways of dealing with short-term rentals.
Right.
You know, the ideal would be if, you know, ideally, if you're going to have them, there needs to be a time span, like a minimum of a week or 10 days. We have people coming 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, people walking around, you've never seen them before.
We have ordinances already that address all that.
Okay.
So we have good input, but we do have ordinances. We typically address them as issues come up. We did a whole, we spent about 9 months going through that, 2 years ago?
Right.
And what came down to is if you have a single bedroom, that's the only one you can stay for one night. The rest of them, if you have three bedrooms, minimum stays are 3 or 4 nights. I don't know the exact number, but that's where we came
to. So I'm hearing we have regulations.
We do.
So maybe I'm suggesting we need to take a look at those and see what's going on. So that's way down here. You guys are working up here. So I'm going to sit down.
Thank you. No, you don't have to.
But thank you very much. It's appropriate. That your comments are appropriate. Thank you. Anyone else wishes to? Yes, sir. I know that.
This is nice, but I don't need it.
I just learned how to do all this stuff.
My name is Alan Kreischer. I've been a property owner at 32A. Not an apartment, but a quirk of the postal post office. 32A North Weymouth. There was a problem with how to number the buildings as properties around me were developed. Alan Kreischer, I'm in no relation to the former mayor of this town. There are stories about which side of the family he's on, and it's not the side of the family I'm on. We've owned the property since, if you recall, Hurricane Floyd, September 1999. That's when we inked the paper, and I was driving up from Richmond, hopefully, to find the property still in existence. One of the things that has seemed to guide the planning for the city more often than not, not the city, but in my area, North Beach, Northeast Ventnor redevelopment area, has been the density of housing combined with the coverage of the lots. All of it conspiring to produce congestion, lack of ventilation. There's one comment even was it would lead to bad morals. I don't know about that. It has been caused by conversion of single family units to two family and even multi-family dwellings with or without the city's approval, but now they've been there so long that they get grandfathered. Excessive building and lot coverage, you just sat and reviewed a building
plan that was asking for increased coverage. Relieve me from the need to only cover X number of square feet of this land because we need to make a bigger house. Okay, I can understand that. One of the ways to deal with a question that was raised, I think, was the gentleman here with the fire department?
Yes, left, yeah.
That my house managed to deal with the fact that we only have a 4-foot side yard on either side was in 1989 when the place was built, the building department required triple X drywall, exterior drywall on the outside of the sheathing before the siding.
Sir, if you can make your point as far as the master.
Congestion and coverage. Are they going to remain being overriding principles of the area?
First of all, you have pre-existing conditions in your neighborhood. But the board is very sensitive to densities and congestion and so on down the line. So you're picking up incidents of 20 square feet in the de minimis thing and mentioning that. Other things that are going on, the board is aware of these things and discussing them at great length. And we're aware that north of that section of the community.
You don't seem to form a guide rail, though.
Well, there's a guide rail there. There's existing densities within that community. Now, they're high. We know they're high. Some of the highest in the city. So the city can't arbitrarily change those. However, in the planning, we're trying to adjust these things and take advantage of that.
Encourage multifamilies to revert back to single family is one way.
Well, you could encourage
not them. Allowing a single family lot to be developed into a multifamily lot is another way.
Thank you. If your suggestions are being taken, they're good suggestions.
Okay. We'll be watching to see how the guide rails are followed. We just don't seem to get satisfaction on a regular basis on the issue.
Owners, the board can make suggestions, and the actual compliance has to come from the owners of the property. And if they want to change a property from multifamily to single family, the owner has to.
I understand, but is there any way to encourage that?
Well, one way is
tax abatement.
One way is in the master plan is to make a more firm statement about density. You know, we have to specifically say in the master plan, you don't convert a single family into a two family or multifamily. It's got to be clear. It's got to be something that board members take to heart when they make decisions. But it's got to be in the master plan, well written, obvious, not hidden, but very obvious.
And as needed, followed up with not law, but
that will help your concern for future decisions, because we're not just talking about this year, next year, but way to the future. That should be a policy.
Oh, yeah, I figure I've still got 20 years to live in this city, and I'd like it to be a nice environment that I bought into 25 years ago.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Gover. Come on, you can get up faster than that.
First meeting with Walker. My name is Richard Gover. I live at 26 North Hillside Avenue. I'm a Ventnor. I've been a Ventnor resident for 40 years. And I remember when I first came here, the very first thing I ever heard from realtors, don't go north of the Dorset Bridge. And we heard it over and over and over again for a long time. And when I got here, many of the people that came from Media, Pennsylvania, or from Philadelphia, or from Delaware, they came to the beach for the day, or maybe the weekend, and they went home. When North Beach happened, it was the proudest moment of Richard Gover's 79 years, when I thought what was going to happen in our community with having over 200 people lose their homes. North Beach was born. This subject tonight, I've been educated with a lot of things I've heard tonight, which I'm very, very honored to do. What happened in North Beach? It became a personality, a neighborhood
the people got involved with our porch parties and our meet and greet and the things we, pickup posses. We'd have eight-year-old kids walking with their parents picking up trash on a weekend. And so that was a start to making our community better, making it a neighborhood. That's what's happened in North Beach. Now, when the realtors talk about North Beach, they'll say, located in the upscale North Beach section. After all those years of don't go north of the Dorset Bridge, the gentleman just said about duplex, my main issue tonight is that we are zoned with this master plan for single-family dwellings in our neighborhood, in our section of the town. And what happens is, just a few years ago, the board voted and allowed a person with a single-family home to become a duplex. Parking is crazy in our neighborhood. We all know that. Over 50% of the people that live in North Beach do not have one parking spot other than on the street. Many of them have garages. How many people park in their garage? How many of you can't even park your car from the street up to the driveway because there's not enough room blocking the street? So I want to motivate us to stay along with that subject of the density situation, because you know what'll happen. An attorney will be here and he'll say, well, you set precedent. You did this and you did it with them. Why can't you do it now for us?
We don't set precedents.
I'm sorry, sir.
Decisions of this board do not set precedents.
Okay, no problem. I'm very, very happy. I see there's a gentleman named Richard Conklin. He's been very involved with North Beach, with our boat we have and events we have. And he's had, because of family problems, had to sell his home. He's got a beautiful house on the South Hillside. He hated to sell that house. He recently put it on the market, and he got an offer from a developer. And then he got an offer from a person who fell in love with the house. He accepted thousands of dollars less selling it to a person that was going to keep the house the way it was, because he didn't want to change it. We don't want to become another Ocean City cookie cutter community. We've got beautiful houses in our community. People love them. I live in a 130-year-old house that I would never think about tearing down. I can appreciate the occasional new houses. I understand that. But we have, because the thing that we have, why do people come here? Come on. The beach, sure. And now COVID has changed things in our community, because now people can live here and work from home. And there are more people. The school situation that Lance mentioned, I'd like to learn more about that, because I don't know about it. I'll learn in the future about the other school availability, because many of the people that were afraid to stay here didn't want to have their children go to Atlantic City High School. And that's what happened.
I'd like to comment on what you said.
Yes,
our 2016 master plan did describe Ventnor by neighborhoods. So there is a portion. But I think what you're suggesting, and I concur, is that we should embellish it in this update. Talk about our neighborhoods a little bit more and get that input about what makes your neighborhood special. And I think that should be the master plan. So that could be a guidance to the board members.
You know, the North Beach situation, the lady, we had to come up with a name after we stopped what happened here. The Benoit family that lived behind the Wawa, they had lived there for 70 years. Mr. and Mrs. Benoit, you could have offered them $5 million for their house, and they didn't want to sell. And they both died in their home. Their family, ladies and gentlemen, it breaks my heart. Their family have been mush in my arms for what I tried to do to stop that happening. And right now, we've got a great community here. We just have to work on it. Just work on it a little bit. I appreciate the time. Thank you very much for the issue. If it's single family dwelling, let's keep it that way. I do have one question, because I heard the gentleman speaking of roads. Lance Will has heard this for 20 years. Why aren't we lining the crosswalks on Ventnor Avenue to encourage people to walk across the street in crosswalks? I know that they can walk three blocks down to the light, But we have a law in this state that you have to allow a person, the automobile has to let the person cross if they're in crosswalks. Why not think about that? If we do one a month, in 2 years, we'll have them lined. Thank you very much for the time. I'm very, very, very proud to be part of this community, and it will never change. And I may disagree with you, and if I do, I'll tell you. And feel free to do the same for me. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Gober, I have one comment.
Yes, sir.
To the citizens of North Beach, they seized the moment and made a neighborhood, a great neighborhood, for themselves. And that's what it's called, neighborhood pride and community working together. They seized the moment.
Yes, they did. You know,
that's what it takes.
The lady that named it, we were sitting in a meeting, what are we going to call ourselves? We were the redevelopment area. We were Northeast. The only thing people did is change the battery and smoke detectors or light bulbs. You couldn't do anything else. They were going to take your homes. And a very nice little old Jewish woman said, well, in Miami, there's South Beach. Maybe we can be North Beach. And that's how it happened. I have never written that word. It was not in bold, capital, italicized letters, because it is I'm selling North Beach. And the people that come here now, you know, I hate the Airbnbs, but you watch them walk around, and now they're saying, hey, excuse me, sir, what is the name of this community here? And that's what we're doing, bringing people into our community. You've given me more time. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Richard, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you think you created a density in North Beach because you give hugs at Christmas time?
You know what? Last year, I gave 321 hugs during the Christmas parade.
Right.
To little boys, little girls, big men, ladies, wheelchairs, and one time, I hope, a woman stepped off the curb and walked up to me, and she said, Mr. Gober, I only come here every year to get a hug from you, because I don't get one other hug all year. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We're having too much fun here tonight, I guess.
I think it helped myself.
Anyway, we have another candidate here. Come on down.
Hi, my name is Maddie Courtner, and I live 26 Austin Ave. My problem is the same as this lady who said about the Airbnbs. They're very short-term, and they just come and go. They take all of the parking. I don't even know how many people are in one. I mean, I understand that you said there's also some kind of a laws against it, and it was a very dismissive answer because I don't know those laws. And who's going to reinforce those laws?
The code office does.
How am I as
call
a person?
If you have an issue with a code violation, you call the code office like in any other city in the country.
Yeah.
If you have an issue, you call the code office, say they have too many people here, it's overoccupied, they're only staying one night. All those things are regulated here in the city of Vancouver. If you have an issue with it, you call City Hall and you ask a question.
So I am the only one who is policing that?
No. If we see it.
How do you see it? That's what I'm just trying to. I'm not here full time.
They have to get a permit for it.
Okay.
In order to operate a short term rental, you have to get a mercantile license. You have to get inspected, just like any other use. So we come in, we inspect those properties, and you have 3 bedrooms, you can't do less than 3 nights. So that's how all those properties get inspected, just like any other use in any other property in the city.
So, and how long does that law last before you can change it to something more reasonable than 3 nights, for example?
I don't know what, I don't understand the question. The law is the law until we change it.
Until you change it, right. So if that law is not working, how do we change it? Because it's like if that is extremely short.
We had months of hearings on short-term rentals, probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe. So we had months of meetings here in this room with our city commission agenda. We told the public, think we put out rules and we brought it back and actually changed them again to extend the required time. If you have a five-bedroom house, it's a five-night minimum stay. We did rules like that that seemed to help the situation. We've got very few complaints over the last 2 years that I'm aware of. I don't see them coming in as often, because we see the complaints.
Well, I didn't even know where to go, to be honest with you, for the complaints, so.
I just want to add something. It's like, we have a really good structure in City Hall. Our city fathers are very proactive. But in order to have all these different ordinances enforced, they don't have eyes to see everything all the time. So it's really up to the public. If you see something that's not right, you have to report it, you call. Even if you have to do it every couple months, every couple years. That's the responsibility of being in a neighborhood. You want to keep your neighborhood nice, you need to speak up and tell the city fathers, people in City Hall, what you see that's wrong. And that makes their job a lot easier, it would make the public a lot happier.
Because people will stretch the rules.
Yeah.
You know, people speak.
And it's hard for me to be the police of that.
If you see something like that, you say, oh, there's way more cars here than normal. Maybe they have too many people in that building this time. Call the code office.
Yeah.
You can call me a message. You can actually do it on our website. It's an app called 311. You can go on our website, click on that. You have a housing issue, you can use categories. Those emails go to, I get them, I've got one listed here tonight. Someone didn't pick up somebody's trash, so I'm trying to address that. So we see it, my department heads see it. I don't know that the mayor sees a ton of them because the police department doesn't get a lot of those. They're more emergent issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the code office and public works, I get a ton of them. So they're picking my trash. There's a dead rabbit in the street. We got that last week. Can you come pick that up?
It's neighborhood.
Those kind of things. So please go on our website.
Okay.
311, you can do that any time of the day and we will respond. I respond to a lot of them personally. I assign them to a department head, whether it's code, public works. Sometimes I kick it to the mayor's department. If it's a policeman, if the car's parked illegally or something like that.
Okay.
But please.
Is there a way we can get this PowerPoint that you just.
Yeah, it's on our website.
It's on the website. Okay.
But I want to encourage everything that he said. That is the process. You have to take a little bit of ownership on the question because there's only so many police officers. We have a very busy, active, especially in the summer when we grow to 30,000 people from 10,000 people. So we ask everyone that sees something to say something, you know, and that's really part of being a part of the community. And you can do it anonymously. You can do it in person if you like. If you want to educate yourself about those laws, we did do a negotiation in a way with because there's another side of this coin. There are people that's a private property, and you may not like this side of it, but the parking, having a difficulty finding a parking place is not a code enforcement issue. The streets are public spaces. So even the space that I personally have the same situation. I live in Ventnor for the last 25 years and I do not have off-street parking. And this time of year, there I may have to walk a few blocks to get to my house. It's part of what we bought when we bought the area as well.
I understand, but what I'm saying is that like if there's like five cars or just for the Airbnb.
For one space, then there's a question because they, as Commissioner Landgraf said, they literally take measurements of the bedrooms, decide if that's enough bedrooms for one bed or two bed, and give that Airbnb, and we've caught them stretching it. We've caught them adding bedrooms or misrepresenting the location in some way and making it so-called party houses. But to be fair also, it may be difficult in your bedroom, in your area, but there are over 250 Airbnbs in Ventnor. And that's not a Ventnor issue, that's a nationwide issue. Whenever I travel, I typically go to Airbnbs myself. So or a short-term rental, because that's a way to get into the city and it's a little bit more closer to the neighborhood. So there's another side of that. that you want to encourage. You want to bring their wallet, that wallet in so that our businesses can thrive and that we can have the benefit of those businesses in the off-season. So there's a balance. But please come forward whenever you have an issue, talk to the police department, the code enforcement, and they'll educate you. We have a public obligation to educate you if there's a question.
And, yeah, and thank you for coming, first of all. And then please consider taking a more active role. And even talk to your neighbors about it as well. And let's get the street, the community takes care of itself. So just have the confidence.
Yes.
You can do it.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, I'm Dawn Burksena from 5603 Atlantic Avenue. I live in a historic home built 120 years ago that I'm very proud to be the steward of. I'm also the president of the Ventnor Fountain Friends, and it is a private 501c3 community-driven grassroots to restore the fountain in partnership with the city of Ventnor, and our goal is to restore the fountain. I don't know if everyone's familiar with the fountain, but it's absolutely beautiful, and we're hoping that someday we'll have enough funds to do so. Thank you for your time and letting me speak for a moment. I'd like to circle back to the master plan, and I just want to touch on the aesthetics and the beautification, and I didn't see that that might be a subject line of sorts. And I think that that speaks to what you were, as I was listening, it's key and it's important. I think we have a beautiful community, and for me, you were mentioning a couple things about what you are wondering what other people think. When I come into Ventnor, specifically on Dorset Avenue, to me that represents the gateway to your community, our community. So when I'm coming in and I'm making that left and I'm coming towards my home, if you will, I'm excited because I'm here. And I think that visitors feel the same way. So I think the first point of interest should be the gateway. You're doing a phenomenal job on the shopping center. That finally looks like a filled and a place where I can stop on my way in and get groceries and get a little bit of everything, and there's services there. I think it's phenomenal, and it really has enhanced the entryway. So I'm just saying and asking, if you will, is there anything in the plan for beautification and aesthetics? Because people eat with their eyes first. They pull into a place, and I say that tongue in cheek because we're in the restaurant and hotel business. And so I know that for a fact. But in hospitality, et cetera, when you pull into a community, it doesn't matter where you go, you look at everything first. You may not know anything about these sub neighborhoods, et cetera, but you sure see the houses that are manicured, and you sure see the stores that have the shiny front door and the windows are clean, and you sure shop at the stores where everything's organized and looks aesthetically attractive. And I think we need to move more forward in the plan, or at least include aesthetics and beautification, because people do purchase a home. We were looking in Margate, and we just couldn't find anything big enough for our very large family. And we ended up going to look at a home. We were on the fence, and the realtor overheard me say, it's not big enough. We have 5 children, and they're going to get married, and we need a big house. He didn't say anything. We left. He was filling in for someone. He called us later and said, you know, I have this house in Ventnor. Would you consider Ventnor? And I grew up going to Margate, so it was a big deal. And I was like, I'll look at it, honey, but I'm not sure. And when we pulled up to 5603, it is the White House, for those of you that may or may not know this particular home. It was the Furry, Mary Lou Furry home. We walked inside, and I looked at my husband, he looked at me, and we just gave a nod. We were done. It was the perfect house for us, and we were stewards, and we love Ventnor. We've been here 13 years. but we need to move it forward. And I just think that there's so much opportunity, and I'm hoping that beautification and aesthetics are part of it, and we can help by restoring the fountain. Thank you.
Jim, definitely something with the fountain in there. Because it'll help them with their funding.
Yes.
Start a donation or something like that.
And one aspect that was mentioned was trees.
Yes.
That's part of that beautification, that if like Dorset had more trees, it would be even more attractive.
Right.
And I always make the point that after you've baked for 2 or 3 hours on the beach, do you want to walk on concrete and it's 95 or 85? You want to be under the shades. When I come off the beach, I zigzag on various streets to avoid the sun. So that aesthetic, when you have a lot of trees, it looks beautiful. So that's part of what we need to add to, you know, embellish.
Embellish, exactly.
The master plan.
The other aspect is, if you really consider it, that the gateway into the city actually goes from the city limits where you get into the Ventnor Plaza area and go all the way to the Dorset Bridge. That is a high traffic count, and that is the gateway going in. And the boarders are very much aware of this. And we're working on trying to improve that whole area. We're cognizant of it.
Yes, and the bridge, I think that's fabulous. That's wonderful to hear.
And as to the home that you bought, it's been commented on by this board is that we like to save some of our older homes and have them renovated. We don't necessarily need them to have them knocked down. And so we're very sensitive to the issues of the community as well. And it's the owners of the property that do the savings of the homes. The board can work with them, but the owners have to do the whole thing. We can't make it happen. We can work with you. And so it's community, again, the community and the board have to work together.
Well, we're very proud of our historic home.
And we're very fortunate that we're having that. So that's what I can say.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to add, if you can incorporate this as leverage in a way that there, you know, the fountain was on postcards when in the early days of the, you know, the homesteading of Ventnor, there were the great, you know, the pier was an attraction, those kinds of adaptive reuses of existing structures that show the public what the city used to be. I think that's and the fountain is really, and the public works behind it. That's a whole complex that has, like, you know, some real curb appeal, some real historic significance that that could be more too. It could be activated in ways that we haven't seen yet. So
in,
I think,
green space.
It's green space that is vitally important in this area. We all have that.
Not a playground.
Not a playground.
That was a rumor I heard.
No.
This weekend.
No. Not a playground.
Not a playground.
Yeah. But to the point of the previous comments, you know, these houses are built in very close lot lines, and they don't have green spaces. So the shared green space, that is one of the few areas where that can always be protected. It's actually, I think Commissioner Landgraf would say, there's a loop there. There's piping underground in our biggest.
Not only that,
there's a big reservoir there. So that's, it's very good. It's going to be a long, way beyond our lifetimes before anything changes in that space. And to have it activated in other ways, I think, is a way to leverage it in a master plan to really bring in other sources of grant money. Because it's ultimately, you know, money is the thing to push.
These are very,
I appreciate good. Everything you've done. You've been working on this tirelessly.
Thank you.
And you need that kind of focus to get
Thank
it done.
You.
What
These
are the
very
cross
innovative
streets?
Ideas?
I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, what are the cross streets on your block? On Atlantic.
You know, on Atlantic?
He's on Atlantic.
Yeah, some.
You're on Atlantic.
Yeah, I'm right on Atlantic.
I know. What are the other streets on your block?
Somerset and Suffolk. I'm in between.
Oh, yeah.
Somerset.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What you have here, please come up, is we're seeing a lot of innovation from an idea from you, the members of the public, and also this board is very innovative and would like to be more. So we're progressive, and I got to thank you guys too, man. You put some good ideas up, and you know, got some courage too. So we love it. And please, okay.
Hi, I'm Stacy Coleman. I live at 5207 Winchester. We have only been here for 3 years, and we have grown to love the community. I wanted to reiterate what you just said, in that we tell people to come, Waze will tell them to come through Atlantic City, and we say, don't go that way. We send them right past the Acme and down Dorset, because that's what we want them to see. So putting that in the master plan and making sure that that's part of it, I think would be huge. And I know a lot of people have talked about the parking, and I just want to talk about that also, because for the first time ever on the 4th of July, we had people parked in front of our house on Winchester. And if you've ever come around the corner where the 4-unit townhome right there, you can't get anybody by, but that's how bad the parking has gotten.
I think the island sunk about a foot that day.
You can call if anybody's in your, if anybody's
we,
in
we
your,
did.
Your curb.
And they came and they put out, there's no, I mean, it does not have yellow,
the stripe in front of it, in front of your curb cut, but a curb, but the curb, well, the curb cut itself is indication that you can't park in front of it.
You would think.
You would think.
We had 4 cars parked in front of our complex.
They need to call the police department.
They, somebody called someone and they came and they put up cones and do not, no parking, and they were going to tow somebody.
Right.
But
we'll take a look at it and see if we can put some stripes up there.
It would be good. I mean, obviously, that area also is very, very prone to flooding. We're getting a lot of flooding, and so I don't know what master plan can do by looking at the different flooding going on, but that would be tremendous. And the other thing is, you talked about the Airbnbs and calling. How do we know if they're a registered Airbnb? Because I know the one next to us was not registered, and we had no idea.
About it. Just call it in.
It may take a day. May be calling it in the evening when there's a large party going on, and that becomes a code. That becomes a police enforcement situation where they'll go there and assess the situation. And then we actually have started a process 2 years ago, when the officers arrive, they ask, "Are you the owner? Yes or no." Are you renting? How long, if you're not, how long are you renting for? And they code it so that we can search it in our what's called the CAD entry of all the police reports that we get. So we've started to create data when we have code enforcement, when we have police enforcement issues at Airbnbs.
Okay.
And so that call, again, the public has to take some ownership on their situation in their area. Not only, we all bought on a barrier island that should probably have been left alone.
I'm completely on water, so I understand what you're saying.
It doesn't matter how many sprinklers or wawas we put here, we're on a barrier island. And we're in one that people want to go to all on 4th of July. So so that phone call about your parking and about the Airbnbs, we do have a system in place, and it may take a day for it to get to code enforcement and then for them to be checked, but it goes on record.
If it's occurring and it's a nuisance, call it in.
Okay.
And don't worry about that.
We use 311
website, because then that's a code thing. If it's a noise issue or a public safety issue, PD.
Okay.
But I will say, on your flooding, so at the end of that street, that bulkhead, so that we're working with a new property owner with that vacant lot, he's purchased that. Some bulkhead
The bulkhead has gone in already. It has not stopped the flooding.
Because we now have to do the street.
Okay.
That's coming. That's
okay.
It's in design now, I believe.
Okay.
It may already be done and ready for bidding soon. So that will help that. Because right now it's an open-ended street.
Yes.
You could drive right into that bulkhead, you could push over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
No, it's not.
The only other thing that I would say is that I noticed that we give out our visitors their parking passes and things like that, but there's no real enforcement. And so people will go and park, and they may only supposed to be parked there for a certain number of hours, but no one ever gets a ticket. So that might be something we could look into.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. At this point, is there any, you want to make a comment here?
Come on.
Okay. Yep. Come on down.
Brian Smith, 26 North Weymouth.
Wait. Okay, Brian.
Can you generate a list of the approved Airbnbs? Because sometimes, like on the 4th of July, people have a lot of guests, and you can't tell which house is Airbnb, and they are running amok in our neighborhood. That's why we're all here, because we're concerned about changing densities and...
I'll have to defer to the mayor and our attorneys whether a list would go out, because there's...
Honestly, these are not master plan questions.
Yeah.
It really comes...
These are code issues.
So we have a meeting tomorrow night, I'll talk about that with our solicitor and see.
But, yeah, we're going to try and wrap it up here. So if there's any...
Not a bad question, right?
But, yeah. So that's it. If there's no further questions, I think we're going to wrap it up for the evening. Mr. Rattell, do you have anything further you wish to add?
No, thank you. I appreciate the input, and when we start it, we'll probably work towards having more public meetings and unique ways to get people involved.